From WXXI News, it's 1370 Connection. I'm Bob Smith, and I'm joined in the studio this hour by the Innovation Trail team's managing editor, Matt Leonard. And we're going to be taking a look at New York State's energy future, including where we get it, what impact it has, and how much it's going to cost us.
Afternoon, Bob, hi to the listeners there. Yes, we've been running a series all this week as part of our Innovation Trail reporting project for WXXI and for Upstate New York Public Radio partners on energy security investment, particularly because there's been so much discussion around the hydrofracking issue. We thought it was time to look into the very, very other very serious issues around energy that face New York State. And late last year, the Cuomo administration laid out a big agenda for New York's future energy requirements. This was called the Energy Highway Blueprint. The plan has to address a range of challenges, including the security of our energy supply, the state's aging power stations, the role of renewable energy, and of course, pricing for consumers. So we set out to really sort of unpick a bunch of the strands of this energy highway and do some special reporting on that. And you can review all those stories up on innovationtrail.org. And as we go through the next couple of hours, you'll have a chance to recap all of that material with our reporters and some special guests as well, Bob.
And of course, you can respond at various times during the course of the next couple of hours to those guests as well by dialing in at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, as Matt mentioned a moment ago, we are talking about all of the aspects of New York's energy future, where we're going to get it, how we use it, how much we use, what it's going to cost, whether it's going to be sustainable, and we're also going to discuss the degree to which any solution to our long-term energy needs will involve a public-private partnership involving both management and dollars, not to mention support for the development of new technologies. You've been hearing a series of reports on that subject, and we began with a look at Governor Cuomo's Energy Highway Blueprint. Innovation Trail's Matt Richman filled us in on those plans' goals.
It's easy to miss this red brick building. It's on a residential street outside of Albany. There's no sign telling drivers that the flow of all the electricity in New York State is being controlled inside. The organization at the controls is the New York Independent System Operators, or NYISO. They're a nonprofit created after New York's energy markets were opened up in the 90s.
Somebody once described us as kind of like the air traffic controller for electricity, and that's actually a pretty good description.
That's NYISO spokesperson Dave Flanagan. 11,000 miles of transmission lines and more than 300 power plants are monitored from six computer consoles at NYISO's control center. Flanagan says the biggest challenge is making sure power gets to New York City.
We have really a surplus of electricity, but we are limited in some cases in our ability to get the electricity from areas where we have those surpluses to areas where the demand is greatest.
Flanagan says bottlenecks around Albany are the main issue. Most power travels from western New York eastward to Albany and then south down the Hudson Valley into New York City. Often around Albany, there's just too much power trying to get to New York City. That means higher prices in the city and a reduced market for upstate producers. Flanagan says a mixture of expanded transmission and new power sources would address the problem. That's where Governor Cuomo's Energy Highway Blueprint comes in. It's a series of proposals leading to an estimated $5.7 billion in investment in the next 10 years to increase power transmission and generation. Donna DiCostanzo, a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, applauds the parts of the plan that focus on clean energy.
To ensure that what's being brought down from our transmission lines is clean.
The blueprint calls for $250 million in renewable energy contracts and $35 million more in transmission upgrades to connect new sources to the state's grid. DiCostanzo says renewable energy and efficiency upgrades could supply enough power to replace Indian Point, the nuclear power plant 40 miles north of New York City.
It's clear that we do need to do something about Indian Point. When a natural disaster, many of which we've seen in the last couple of years, including an earthquake, flooding, and tornadoes, could shut the plant down or trigger a disaster.
Closing Indian Point is not included in the energy highway, but Governor Cuomo has argued for its closure since 2011. But Jerry Kremer, chairman of the New York Affordable Reliable Electricity Alliance, says the governor's plan would be most useful if closing Indian Point was left off the table.
The whole idea for the energy highway is to find ways to improve transmission and to get new sources and not to throw a monkey wrench into an existing source.
He also criticizes a separate transmission project called the Champlain Hudson Power Express, which would bring power from Canada directly into New York City.
The problem with Champlain Express is that it's like taking the power from Canada and having one long extension cord into New York City. It creates no jobs.
That project is still waiting for approval. Kremer argues the focus should primarily be on carrying additional upstate produced power into the city. Some of the projects included in the Energy Highway are just starting this year, and many will run past 2018. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richmond for WXXI News.
And we'll be joining Matt right away on the line from the Southern Tier region as well. And I guess I will throw it over to Matt Leonard because he's been working with Matt Richmond and studying this issue.
Afternoon, Matt. Matt's with our partner station WSKG and part of the Innovation Trail. And you can also participate in our conversation here at Innovation Trail if you're a Twitter user and celebrating Twitter's seventh birthday. Matt, we heard in that report, when we were discussing the kind of the framework for your report, you focused in quite rightly, I think, on this idea of the bottleneck, this sort of energy bottleneck. Do you want to just talk a bit about why you felt that was kind of an important sort of little entry point for people to understand, you know, as we sort of looked at the energy blueprint that Cuomo's administration's got out there?
Well, sure. I think it's very important because there's an imbalance in the way that the market works right now where, you know, if you produce power in upstate, you don't get the same price that you would get if you produce it close to the city on the other side of that bottleneck. So if they, and it makes things very, very complicated and kind of hurts upstate producers, you know, when they could be, when the market is up best for them. So I think to kind of, if you want to look at the future of energy in New York, I mean, a lot of it is going to come from upstate. And so New York has to figure out a way to kind of make it work best.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, this plan we're looking at, just to remind people, because the numbers can be a bit sort of mind-boggling, 3,200 megawatts of electric generation and transmission, private investments of up to $5.7 billion. We heard in your report from Donna DiCostanzo with the Natural Resources Defense Council a kind of, I guess, pretty warm reception from that sort of sector about the focus on clean and renewable energy in the Energy Highway Blueprint.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's sort of a deadline. The New York Renewable Portfolio Standard expires in 2015, and that's a goal for 30% of the state's electricity to come from renewables. So they were looking for, you know, signs that there are goals that will be set, and they'll build on that achievement beyond 2015, and I think that they saw that.
Uh-huh. We're going to talk a little bit more about Indian Point in the second hour with Democrat Senator Ted O'Brien, who's got some concerns about Indian Point generally. But could you just reinforce what Jerry Kremer from the New York Affordable Reliable Electricity Alliance said about Indian Point? Just remind us what his point was.
His point was just that if you're talking about energy security, you know, you shouldn't be talking about removing a large supply like that that's in a place where the demand is greatest, that, you know, all these other things can be done in addition to keeping Indian Point open.
Okay. And another topic that we'll come back to in the second hour as well, which was raised in your, you know, sort of overview report, was this Champlain-Hudson Power Express, this CHPE, a $2.2 billion transmission project that would bring power from Quebec into New York City, which is obviously an area that needs attention. Why do you think that's sort of such a significant part of the conversation, this transmission highway?
Well, first, New York State has enough power to more than supply the whole state, even in, you know, hot summer nights when everybody's got their air conditioning on. There's still enough power here. So I think some people are kind of concerned about bringing it in from Canada when you don't really need to. And then when you run a line from, or the line that they're proposing is a direct current line, so it, you can't tie into it along the way. And so that means that, you know, they'll be building this long piece of infrastructure that'll just be for the Canadian producer.
Right. Matt Richmond, thanks very much. Matt Richmond's our reporter with WSKG. And you heard in that report from the New York Affordable Reliable Electricity Alliance. And joining us now from that particular group is Paul Steidler. Paul, welcome to 1370 Connection and Innovation Trail.
Yes, it's very good to be here, Matt.
Paul, just tell us a little bit, just remind us of the role of your alliance in terms of you know, overseeing electricity and energy issues in particularly in the state of New York.
Yes, well, New York area represents about 150 business organizations and labor unions. And as our name indicates, we're very concerned about the price and reliability of electricity in the state. We were formed shortly after the 2003 blackout and are strong advocates for solutions that will ensure that we keep and increase clean and affordable supplies of electricity.
At the same time, of course, a lot of people who remember that blackout remember that more than anything else, it was a failure of control and monitoring systems and networks that took a lot of the northeastern United States and some portions of Canada down to begin with. Did we begin by making the investments that were necessary in upgrading those systems so that they would be, I mean, there's no such thing as a total fail-safe, but did we make it a lot closer to fail-safe than it was 10 years ago when that disaster happened?
Yes, Bob, you're absolutely right, and there have been a number of major investments and improvements in New York's grid that have taken place over the past decade. It's also important to keep in mind that the cause of the blackout 10 years ago was some trees out in Ohio that fell and ultimately had a cascading effect. But a number of steps have been taken, so if something like that occurs again, it is less likely to cascade and have the very severe economic effects that it had. But you know, there are other very significant threats to the grid that are at hand here, one of which is the New York State Independent System Operator has very clearly warned that if Indian Point, which provides 11% of the state's power, goes offline, that the state is going to be in violation of its grid reliability standards. And because of that, because of the fact that the Public Service Commission is entertaining a proposal that would increase rates by $811 million on New Yorkers across the state to close down the plant, we think it's very important that Indian Point continue to operate. It's a safe, reliable, large facility. And we think it's also very important that New York continue to create an investment climate that's going to attract new sources of electricity and new sources of generation. You know, we really have a great opportunity at this point to transition to greater use of electricity to heat homes and to power cars and to use natural gas for that, that can really invigorate our economy. And rather than, you know, having the discussion be about can we replace this plant or that plant, we think the focus really has to be on how can we attract investment to grow our infrastructure, to create jobs, and to lower prices and really, you know, help create an economic boom for all of New York State.
Well, that raises a number of questions, but probably the one that we ought to discuss first and foremost right now is, if that implies, as I think it does, construction of new generating facilities somewhere within the state of New York, first of all, who should pay for them? And second of all, what kinds of facilities should we build if we want to have something that's going to have a minimum impact on the use of fossil fuels, on environmental impact, and obviously on safety and overall sustainability? I mean, what kinds of facilities should we build?
Well, all of the facilities that are going to be built or that should be built with private capital and private investment dollars. And we think it's very important for New York to have a diversified portfolio of what's known as baseload power sources. These are sources that can operate 24/7 and are extremely reliable. And there are, you know, four sources of those: coal, natural gas, hydropower, and nuclear. New York, in fact, right now gets more hydropower at something like 21% of its portfolio than any other state east of the Mississippi. And given that, and given the fact that New York has very low amounts of coal power generation, as well as about 30% of its electricity from nuclear power at six plants which don't emit carbon, the state has the lowest per capita carbon emissions in the country right now. So there's a lot of very good and positive things about New York's electricity portfolio, and, you know, things that we think should be built on. Renewables are going to be more key and critical going forward, but they are also expensive. They also face opposition in many communities in which they are proposed. So the short answer to your question is, you know, we should keep the clean sources that we have looked at, particularly on the natural gas, hydro, and even nuclear side longer term, and also attract a bevy of renewable proposals, wind and solar, especially items in the Great Lakes and offshore.
Given that nuclear power creates a set of problems of its own, ranging from what do you do with the spent fuel to what do you do in terms of long-term reliability, are we basically reduced to either more coal plants or more natural gas-fired plants?
Well, right now there's a big attraction toward natural gas plants because the price of natural gas is so low, and there are tremendous environmental concerns about coal that are out there. But the safety record of nuclear power is extremely strong. You, for instance, have never had a radiological-related death in 50 years of U.S. Commercial nuclear plant operation. And because nuclear plants are non-emitting, they don't put out carbon and they don't put out other toxic chemicals like nitrous oxides, it's actually very important for the downstate area from an environmental standpoint to continue to have nuclear power as a key part of the state's portfolio, because that actually reduces pollution emissions and makes for a safer environment in an area that's already challenged in that regard.
Well,
what we do need to do, and what the federal government needs to do, is to find a federal repository for nuclear waste, whether it's going to be at Yucca Mountain or someplace else, so that those items can be shipped out and permanently stored. But right now, the storage technology is very good. It's very solid, but it would be beneficial to have it shipped out of state.
Paul Seidler, thanks very much. Paul was joining us from the New York Affordable Reliability Electricity Alliance, and Paul's raised a number of the issues that we'll be getting to as we go through the program today. You're with Matthew Leonard, editor of the Innovation Trail Reporting Project, joining Bob Smith on 1370 Connection. And another part of the energy highway puzzle, I guess, is this $1 billion green bank that was announced in the budget and in the plan itself. This is a fund to support the ongoing development of renewable energy technologies. What's interesting about this fund, it's only the second fund of its kind in the country. Our reporter Ryan Delaney from WRVO has the details now.
More energy-efficient technologies come onto the market fairly regularly, and things like boilers and windows have been getting more energy-efficient for decades. But the decision on whether to use greener components to replace, say, the hot water heaters in an apartment building will often come down to cost, and the fact that the older technologies are usually cheaper is a constant challenge to the producers of newer energy-efficient products. New Climate has been in business since 1984, making energy-efficient heating and cooling systems in Syracuse, the birthplace of air conditioning. The company's vice president, John DeMillo, says business is booming, They recently won a contract to have their units installed in several public schools in New York City. But it's a constant struggle for New Climate to convince contractors to go with their product, and that's where some additional incentives could come in handy.
Contractors are faced today with a more competitive bidding process than ever before, and so because of that, they're forced to bid very low on jobs and then figure out how they're going to make some money afterwards.
DeMillo says a public fund that could defray some of the costs for contractors if they chose more energy-efficient options could make his company even more competitive. And that's essentially the goal of Governor Cuomo's proposed $1 billion green bank to increase the use of energy-efficient products, from home water heaters to giant wind turbines. If the idea makes it through the budget process, the state won't be totally flying blind as it works to set up the bank. Cuomo pointed to Connecticut, the first state in the country to start a green bank, as a model. The Connecticut Clean Energy Finance and Investment Authority, or CEFIA, was formed in 2011. David Goldberg, the director of external relations for CEFIA, says the goal of a green bank, put simply, is to invest taxpayer money into a clean energy project in the hope it'll attract a larger sum of private investment. Goldberg says the idea of a green bank was met with wide support in his state.
It's a nonpartisan at worst and a bipartisan at best matter because the idea of using these monies in a more effective and efficient way to not only attract the private capital, but to use that in a manner that'll provide the opportunity to make smart energy choices.
Goldberg points to a smart loan program about to get underway that'll use $18 million in state and federal money, combined with $80 million in private money. Exactly how New York's Green Bank will be funded is unknown. The governor's budget says it'll utilize resources from the New York Power Authority and NYSERDA, the state's energy research arm. Goldberg says CEFIA draws money from a combination of grants and tax dollars. The bank also has the ability to pass bonds. Along with loan programs for homeowners, a green bank could also be involved in larger projects, like solar fields. Decisions on how New York's green bank will be run is up to Richard Kaufman. Cuomo tapped Kaufman earlier this year to join his cabinet as energy czar. Kaufman is a former advisor at the U.S. Department of Energy. Ed Bogish says it was a bit of a coup for Cuomo to snatch Kaufman up from Washington. As the director of Syracuse's Center of Excellence for Sustainability, Bogish works with companies developing new energy-efficient projects.
And the opportunity of creating a green bank to support investments that are going to have these paybacks to ratepayers and to municipalities really is a tremendous thing.
Bogish describes the competitive obstacle many clean tech companies face in the marketplace as a chasm.
If they don't leap across the chasm, then they wind up not achieving their potential for sales.
He says the Green Bank will help those new products gain acceptance and compete with their more traditional competition. No doubt, Richard Kaufman's experience in the financial markets will also be called on if the fund is to deliver on its ambitious agenda. In Syracuse, I'm Ryan Delaney for WXXI News.
As we mentioned in the previous report, a green energy bank is not unique in the United States, but it is close to unique among large states. And we talked to Ryan Delaney in a follow-up conversation about implementing it on perhaps the largest scale it's been done yet. You've heard about the green bank. You've heard about green development. And now with us, the reporter who filed the story you've just been listening to. Here's Ryan Delaney from WRVO. Ryan, at this point, you had a look at people who were trying to implement the idea of green technology and turn it into a profitable enterprise. What's the sense that you got of how well they were making a go of it?
I think in some areas, in some aspects, they are doing well. There's certainly a lot of companies out there that are focusing on green energy and a lot of people that are interested in buying it. The big hurdle right now is the money available. The company that we heard from in the story, their big obstacle is competition. You know, their product is more expensive to make and thus more expensive to sell. So the hard part is coming up with a marketable product, a way to convince clients that, you know, it's better for them to go with this more energy efficient product and try to sell them of that long-term investment versus buying the cheaper, less efficient cooling system up front.
Now, if they can demonstrate that the extra investment they're asking customers to make can amortize itself pretty quickly and result in a savings not too far down the road, and they can effectively demonstrate that and sell it, they'll still be okay. Are they having trouble, though, convincing people who are prospective customers that this is a kind of technological advance that's easy to amortize, to pay for itself?
I think it's probably hit or miss. I think this green bank and the state government putting so much more emphasis on this will certainly help. The reflection that I got from people that I talked to for this story was that, you know, if New York State put their muscle, if we had a green bank to turn to offer grants or a way to make our product seem that much more marketable and usable and affordable, this could really take off. It could be a huge booster to their bottom line.
But, of course, at the same time, it's one thing to say, this is going to be better for you. It's better for the environment. It's another thing to say, oh, by the way, also, as time goes on, as you look 3 or 4 years down the road, you're going to find out your real costs of operation are down significantly, and it's worth the investment. Do they need to have extra money coming in from the state directly or indirectly in order to be able to bring their production and their sales costs down to the point where they can actually make that case convincingly?
The way, at least, you know, New Climate, the company we heard from this story, foresees the Green Bank working is if the Green Bank can offset some of those initial costs, because that's what the contractor really cares about. The guy that's building this project, he only cares about getting in under budget for this project. And a lot of the weight on those decisions comes down to the contractor. So I think that's a big hurdle that these companies face right now.
Could it be then that the contractor who's building something using this technology isn't seeing the benefit for himself, that whatever benefit comes out is just going to be passed along to the eventual end user? And so he's not going to get anything extra out of it. He needs more upfront to help him through in order to be able to sell. Is that the bottom line?
Yeah, and I think that's one area where people see this green bank being able to, this, you know, dollar fund being able to help out.
We're hearing from Ryan Delaney, the Innovation Trail reporter based at WRVO in Central New York. In a moment, we take a look at some of the research going on right now that could very well benefit. As 1370 Connections trip along the Innovation Trail, looking at New York's energy future, will continue. This is 1370 Connection. I'm Bob Smith, and this special edition of the program is a project of the Innovation Trail team, headed by team managing editor Matt Leonard, who is taking on the co-host's chores today. And we will be taking a look closely at the future of energy in New York State, consumption and especially production and distribution. Now, Central New York is a focal point for research in this field. And we have with us on the line Ed Bogush, who's director for the Syracuse-based Center for Excellence, joining us on the line. Ed, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I guess, first of all, what kinds of technologies, what kind of technology advances are starting to catch on and draw a little bit of interest from both end users and from investors?
Well, end users are, and investors are always looking for opportunities that will, and users are looking for opportunities that will save money, and investors are looking for opportunities that will make money. And we see innovations across upstate in a variety of technologies, particularly technologies that are associated with energy use in buildings. There's a revolution going on in lighting. in heating, air conditioning, indoor environments, and building materials in all of these areas, either by making buildings more energy efficient or producing electricity on site through a variety of technologies. All of these innovations are emerging in New York State and attracting interest from investors and end users.
Now, maybe the most visible ones to most people initially are those energy-saving lights, the sort of coiled screw-in lights that are replacing the incandescent bulb that Thomas Edison gave us 140 years ago. But that's just the most visible example of it. What are the ones that may make the most difference?
It depends on the ultimate application. If we think about energy efficiency in buildings and, say, individual homes across upstate, you know, the technologies that make the most impact are ones that improve energy efficiency in the house. So insulation is a great investment. And then efficiency of systems like heaters and boilers and air conditioners, water heaters. All of these are critical areas where there are new technologies that improve and reduce the energy consumption to produce the same amount of heat or cooling.
Ed, hi, it's Matthew here. Just wondering, I'd like to get a sense of your enthusiasm for the Green Bank. I mean, why do you think this is such a kind of useful model at this particular time, given there are so many challenges for energy security, you know, nationally and, of course, here in New York?
So there's been a lot of focus over the last 10 years and really even looking back further over the last 40 years on developing new technologies. And there are a lot of technologies that are currently commercially available but are underutilized in the marketplace. Often what the barrier is involves the financing of the project. So just as the reporter Ryan Delaney had just identified, so sometimes these products, it's an issue of kind of pay me now or pay me later. So mm-hmm. there may be an upfront cost for a more energy efficient technology, you know, whether it's a boiler or an air conditioner in your house or in a big building, but that investment in the new technology will pay back over time through lower energy cost.
Right. So it's effectively, it's a kind of a premium on what is more cutting-edge technology, but because of the sort of residual, the legacy technologies, I guess, that are, I assume, getting cheaper and cheaper, there's still this kind of competitive bridge there that has to be straddled.
That's exactly right. So the Green Bank has the opportunity to make it attractive for private funds to come into the marketplace. So there's the role for public-backed funds to give confidence and security to the private market. Really what the vision of the Green Bank is, I think, is what we expect will emerge as the plans are developed, is really to unleash the private capital, mm-hmm. so that would really drive the market. We talk about $1 billion fund for New York. That's a lot of money, but it'll have a much bigger impact if it attracts private money into making investments in energy infrastructure and energy efficient projects.
How significant is the appointment of Richard Kaufman, to this particular task? Because you mentioned, I guess, the challenge. We know there's some challenges in attracting investment to the energy sector now because of the relatively low cost of natural gas, for example. Kaufman's interesting because, of course, people talk about his role in the Department of Energy, but he's also got significant experience on Wall Street, you know, working with private investment funds like Morgan Stanley, et cetera.
This is a very exciting appointment for New York State. You're going to lift your cap to Governor Cuomo for attracting an individual who has, as you indicate, you know, he's got experience in New York and knows Wall Street, and he's got a national perspective of serving in the Department of Energy and advising the country on making a financial investment. So now we tap his experience from Wall Street, his understanding of national and even international trends, in technology and financing, and to focus that on opportunities to really transform how the state is organizing its multiple efforts relating to energy.
And we have Rich on the line calling in from the city. And, Rich, you have a question.
Yes. My concern with all this is maybe oversell, because I have had some experience with solar heating, you know, hot water heating. And in upstate New York, there's problems in the winter. And I think that the contractors need to educate people more on the limitations of such technologies.
Now, interesting you anticipate that. We're going to discuss that in even further detail in the next hour of the broadcast, but let's put it on the table right now for initial discussion. Are we, in a sense, making implicit promises about the possibilities of new technologies even before we know whether or not we're going to be able to cash those checks that we're writing on the future?
Yeah, I think that in any individual technology, whether it's solar thermal or solar photovoltaics and energy efficient boilers, and when, say, a homeowner interacts with a contractor who wants to make a sale, you know, there's a very compelling case that can be made for a particular product. So there's a need for the public to have a clearinghouse that would vet these technologies and identify the technologies that are most appropriate for the climates across New York State. So I think that this is part of the overall plan that Governor Cuomo and his team have outlined to provide trusted information about which technologies are right for the markets in New York State.
And our thanks to Ed Bogush, director of the Syracuse Center for Excellence, for sharing his perspectives with us here on 1370 Connection Special Edition on the Innovation Trail Project about New York State's energy future. I'm Bob Smith. I'm here with Matt Leonard, who is the executive editor of the Innovation Trail Project, which spans the state of New York.
And
he's here with me in studio.
Yep. And we're heading out to Western New York to look at a project that represents some of the kind of dilemmas that the aging power plants in New York State face. We know that there are some very strict emission regulations that were just introduced by the Environmental Protection Agency, and those emissions plus a range of other factors has made things pretty tough for coal-fired power plants, and our reporter, Kate O'Connell, has this report.
This is the boiler. The coal goes in, it gets combusted.
For decades, the NRG power plant has dominated the skyline of Dunkirk, as well as creating local jobs and contributing almost a quarter of the city's operating budget.
Oftentimes, communities don't want power plants in their backyards.
Senator Kathy Young.
This is just exactly the opposite, because the people of Chautauqua County understand how critically important keeping this power plant is to them.
After outlaying millions to bring the Dunkirk station up to speed with environmental regulations, NRG posted significant losses in the year to February 2012, when the price of natural gas began to plummet, taking electricity prices with it. The result? NRG no longer sees the coal plant as a viable business. But the state says Dunkirk Station is too integral to power reliability in the area to shut it down completely.
The second boiler.
Two of the four towers have already been taken offline, with a third to follow in May. But the fourth will continue to run until a decision is made. Repower the facility with natural gas, or bypass it with transmission lines that bring power in from elsewhere. The choice is a no-brainer for Dunkirk Mayor Anthony Dulles.
The impact that energy has is tremendous, and I think the citizens of Dunkirk are well aware of that, and that's why they're behind the repowering of the facility.
If you don't repower the existing Dunkirk, then what's at risk is really the jobs and the tax base for the community.
John Baylor is NRG's Director of Development. He says repowering the station fits the Cuomo administration's energy highway blueprint for the state's energy infrastructure. And better still, NRG would bankroll it.
The plant today that we're proposing is a 440 megawatt combined cycle unit, and that's about $500 million of capital investment.
That's a good deal, says Senator Kathy Young.
It would not only create 500 construction jobs during the building of the new plant, but it also would preserve existing jobs, and that's very important.
Jim Baylor agrees.
Our view is that generation is going to be better than transmission. You have strong economic benefits from investing in the local community, rather than just fixing the wires so that you can import more power from out of state.
But Jim Burpee, President and CEO of the Canadian Electricity Association, says transmission and cross-border integration of supply makes more sense.
The number one benefit of integrated system between Canada and the U.S. has been and continues to be and will be going forward the reliability of the system.
And Burpee makes another point. Canada represents a large source of non-carbon emitting generation.
If there's an objective to decrease the amount of carbon in the overall supply in North America, then it would argue for more integration between Canada and the U.S.
NRG's John Baylor says their plan to repower with a natural gas combined cycle system would encourage green energy development within the state. Combined cycle technology has the ability to scale electricity production up and down very quickly, making the technology an ideal partner for green and intermittent energy sources, like wind.
It's a more natural support and just the way that energy can be generated, turned on and off, that matches nicely with wind and other intermittent renewable energy sources.
So what's the next step? National Grid, which owns and operates the upstate transmission networks, will evaluate NRG's plan and make a recommendation to the Public Services Commission on whether repowering the plant or upgrading transmission lines will be better for customers, the environment and grid stability. Mayor Dolce says he's seeing overwhelming support for the repowering scenario in Dunkirk, even though the plant would require less manpower in the long term.
Natural gas is just that much more efficient that they'll go from 145 jobs when this process began down to 26. But the glass half full look is it will make the plant stable for the next 50 plus years.
That trade-off is one that a lot of other power plants and their surrounding communities will also be weighing up as the use of coal in electricity production continues to decline. In Rochester, I'm Kate O'Connell for WXXI News.
And as we continue on the innovation trail, Dunkirk's Mayor Anthony Dulce is joining us on the line. He heads a community that is a big stakeholder in the NRG plant's future as a power source and as a job source and perhaps as a source of property taxes, too. Mayor Dulce, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Glad to be on.
Now, as you mentioned in your conversation with Kate not too long ago, whatever happens at that plant, the actual employment is almost destined to go down somewhat, isn't it?
Most definitely. Most definitely. Originally started with 145 jobs at its most recent peak. If the conversion is allowed to go through, they will only need 26 employees to run the plant.
And what kind of conversion are we talking about, just to get the details straight? Are they going to essentially abandon coal as a fuel source completely and go straight to try to do a gas-fired situation?
Over the course of approximately 4 years, that is their plan. They currently have four generators. Only one is being used right now. And if they're allowed to convert to a natural gas operating plant, they will slowly, they have a coal pile, they will slowly burn up that coal pile and be a dual generating plant throughout the process of conversion. By 2017, their plan would be to have a fully operational natural gas plant.
Are all of those generators eventually going to go back online to fulfill future needs for electricity, maybe not just in the Dunkirk-Fredonia area, but all over western New York? Will you start distributing power all over the region again?
That would be NRG's goal, and that would be great for the city of Dunkirk and Chautauqua County, but I'm not sure if that's the reality. I'm not sure if all that is going to be needed. The proposal is for a 450-megawatt facility, so chances are they won't need to go back to four generators.
Unless there's a huge increase in demand coming from some other part of the region, maybe Buffalo or perhaps. How far does the service area of that plant go?
If we're able to get the lines, the transmission lines upgraded, there would be those endless possibilities, and it would be great for them to have full use of the plant. But 450 megawatts would be a lot more than what they're about to be. They're about to be down to 80 megawatts. So, you know, quadrupling that would be tremendous.
Mayor Dolls, hi, it's Matthew Leonard here. I'm just wondering, because we heard there from Senator Cathy Young, and I know how important has that kind of political support been for the community and the decision-making around the future of the NRG plant in your town?
The support is, political support has been tremendous. There's been a complete bipartisan effort to see this plant repowered as a natural gas operating plant. It's what the political leaders want. It's what the community wants. It's one of those rare cases where everybody is on the same page.
And it's kind of running counter to the, I guess, the, one of the reasons we actually were interested in doing a story about this particular case is because the decisions you're making are sort of a kind of a mirror image of what's going on the eastern side of New York State with this massive Champlain Hudson Power Express, which is the complete opposite model, you know, a transmission model from Quebec that we'll hear about in the second hour of the program. Is that also, and we also heard from a representative of the Canadian Electricity Association in that story about the benefits of integrating with the Canadian grid. What's your feeling about the place of Canadian or imported power in the final result?
Well, obviously that's not our preferred source of electricity. We feel strongly here on this end of the state that we have a facility that's already in operation, has been in operation for 50-plus years. Why not make it more viable to downstate by updating our transmission lines?
Yeah.
Why increase the footprint? We have the footprint right here.
Right.
If so, this facility was to be deemed unnecessary, then you also have an environmental impact. A plant with 50-plus years worth of coal piles probably will present some health issues.
Right.
If the plant stays in operation, obviously those coal piles still have to be dealt with somehow. Is the hope that between now and 2017, when you go all gas, that you can somehow consume that or move it off-site and sell it someplace else?
Their plan, NRG's plan, would be to use up the remaining coal piles during the conversion process.
So they essentially need to burn it.
Exactly. Recently, they did go over $200 million worth of upgrades to the plant to make that coal more efficient and meet future EPA standards. So if the coal market was more stable right now, we wouldn't see the push to convert to a gas plant because they've already met upcoming EPA standards.
So it is viable as a coal-fired plant environmentally, then it's just a question of economics at this stage.
Exactly. The plant meets all of the health regulations, EPA standards. Now and what's coming down the line, it's basically economics.
But bottom line is natural gas is not only cleaner, but at this stage with current market conditions, admittedly that could change, but right now it's cheaper.
Yeah, and it's substantially cheaper. We are producing, this plant is producing the cleanest coal that can be produced, but the economics of it, natural gas is just so much cheaper that they don't feel the plant would remain viable by just operating with coal.
Our thanks to Mayor Anthony Dolls of Dunkirk, New York, sharing with us his position as a stakeholder in the future of what had been one of the biggest coal-powered plants in the upstate New York region and is now switching to natural gas. Our conversations about the innovation trails, findings concerning New York's energy future will continue right after we check what's going on around the world here at WXXI AM and FM HD2 Rochester. I'm Bob Smith, along with Matthew Leonard, and we'll be back with more and our look at the energy future of New York right after the news. See you then.